This is U.S. Lighthouse Society historian Jeremy Dontremont. We've done almost 300 episodes of the podcast, Lighthearted, in the past 5 years. Most of the interviews we've done have been about a half hour to an hour. To me, it's not just a podcast, but it's also an oral history project that I hope might serve as a research tool for people in the future. But I realize that listening to an hour-long podcast is not something everyone wants to do. So we're trying something new, and I'm calling it Lighthearted Light. That's Lighthearted Light, L-I-T-E. I'll be editing some favorite interviews from the past 5 years, down to around 10 to 20 minutes. My hope is that this will attract listeners who don't have time for the longer ones. We'll still keep posting the longer episodes as well. For the first edition of Lighthearted Light, we're going back to episode 1 from June 2019. The person interviewed is the award-winning writer and illustrator of children's books, Sophie Blackall. Sophie Blackall is an Australian artist and illustrator of children's books based in Brooklyn, New York. She has illustrated more than 30 books for children. Her books have won many awards, and her children's book, Hello Lighthouse, which she wrote and illustrated, won the 2019 Caldecott Medal. The Caldecott is presented each year to the artist of the most distinguished American picture book for children. So let's listen to my interview with Sophie Blackall now. Sophie, thanks so much for speaking with me today.
I'm delighted.
Thanks so much. And congratulations on the Caldecott Medal for Hello Lighthouse. It's a beautiful book.
Thank you.
So this was your second Caldecott Medal. Your first was in 2016 for Finding Winnie, the True Story of the World's Most Famous Bear by Lindsay Maddock. And I understand you're one of 9 illustrators to win multiple Caldecotts. That's an incredible achievement. Were you surprised to win a second Caldecott?
You don't really expect to win one in a lifetime, let alone two. So yes, I was incredibly surprised. It was all the more surreal because I happened to be in Myanmar at the time, and with the time difference and everything else, it was an extraordinary phone call to receive, and that I couldn't have been happier. I said to somebody when my second child was born, I was every bit as thrilled as when I had my first child, and you don't expect to have this much good fortune and joy in a lifetime, but I wouldn't return it for the world.
Well, so what was it that inspired you to do a book about a lighthouse and a lighthouse keeper?
I have, like most, as I like to think, like most sensible people on the planet, I have always admired and been fascinated by lighthouses. But it was rifling through old prints at a flea market in Brooklyn many years ago, and I saw a cutaway of the Eddystone Lighthouse in Great Britain. And for the first time, I was actually looking inside a lighthouse. I had always admired them from a boat or from the shore or from a headland. But to see this cutaway with the rooms and the spiral staircase and to suddenly imagine life within these round rooms, this vertical existence, it created some tiny spark of an idea. I was with a friend at the time, and I picked the print up and put it down and picked it up. And she said, "You should get it." And I said, "I don't know why I'm getting this. I don't have any wall space in my house to display it. It's going to go in a drawer." And she said, "It's clearly tugging at you, and we shouldn't ignore things that tug at us," which I thought was tremendous advice ever since then, because I did buy it. And I did put it in a drawer for at least a couple of years. But then I opened that drawer one day, and there it was. And I thought, ah, this is the time. I suddenly saw how it might be a story.
What do you think it is about lighthouses? What makes them so appealing to people, do you think?
I have now asked this question all over the world. I've done a whole lot of school visits, mostly talking to children with this book. And I'm curious too, what is it about lighthouses? And I've had as many answers as you can imagine, as people have all sorts of reasons. And they range from those that I share, that lighthouses are majestic and romantic and compelling. But one child said to me what I have come to think of as one of the best definitions of a lighthouse. And he said, they're like helpful castles in the sea. which sums up both the beauty of the form, the structure itself, and also the purpose that they serve, which is this steadfast guidance. And of course, these days, it's more of a symbolic thing than it is a practical, because most lighthouses are either automated or not illuminated at all. But they stand as a reminder of this time when we were so dependent upon them and the people who maintained them. But there were lights shining out in the deep, dark sea, and for sailors on long journeys, I believe they were a sense of not being alone in the world. They were a sense that someone or something was watching over them. And I think they provide that for all of us.
Helpful castles in the sea. I love that. So how have children responded to the book, to Hello Lighthouse?
It's been phenomenal. I confess this was a book that I wanted to make so much for myself that I worried at some point that I had lost sight of children's interest in it. Like Maurice Sendak famously said, I make books and then other people tell me they're for children. He did not set out to make books for children, but I have always set out to make books for children. They're incredibly important to me, that the way they respond to my books is very important. But I feared with Hello Lighthouse that it became such a personal book that perhaps they wouldn't respond to it in the way that I had hoped. Perhaps it was too grown up. It's about adults more than it is about children. I think it's quite a romantic story, but it's about life and loss and change and renewal and hope. And these are all quite grown up things in a way, until I remembered that they're also things that children experience. They're things that we all experience. And so the reality is, it's been overwhelming how children have responded. And I've gone into schools and a teacher has told me that they have run a competition within the school to have lunch with the author before my visit. And usually they will get a handful of entries and everybody who enters will get to have lunch. But in this one particular school, almost every child in the elementary school entered. They had to either draw or write a poem or a story, something on a theme of a lighthouse. And the pictures and poems and stories that flooded in, there were hundreds of them. And I read almost all of them, and they were joyous. And it really brought it home that everyone loves lighthouses, but especially children. They're as drawn to them as I am, for their own reasons and for the same ones that I am.
Well, that's great to hear. The children have responded so well to it, but I'm sure I'm not the only adult who loves it so much. And, you know, I have a pretty big collection of Lighthouse children's books myself. And I have to say, I love the all the details you included, all the very nicely developed details in the book. Things like the fog bell, the keeper trimming the wick in the lamp, the details of the spiral stairs in the lighthouse, the very detailed drawing of the Fresnel lens in the lighthouse. You went into the automation of the light towards the end of the book. Your research into lighthouses really shows quite a bit. And you mentioned you were inspired by a cross-section of the Eddystone Lighthouse. I was wondering, the lighthouse in the book is a little bit reminiscent of Eddystone Lighthouse, but were you influenced by any other particular lighthouse? Did you base the lighthouse in the book on a particular lighthouse?
Thank you so much for saying that, because I confess, speaking to someone like you who is steeped in decades of lighthouse lore and literature and information, I'm so happy that you think those details are all there. I did do an awful lot of research, but at the same time felt that I was just scratching the surface. There are, as you know, lots of wonderful museums and archives, and the website of the US LHS. Have I got that right?
Yes, you did. Yeah, US Lighthouse Society. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Always those acronyms always throw me. It was, you know, incredibly helpful and is just a wonderful kind of rabbit hole. You can go in there and just go from one link to another. And so that was hugely helpful. But even with that, there were things that I was towards the end of the book when I realized that during the daytime that the lens needed to be protected from the sun, that there were that otherwise there was the risk of fires, and so there would be curtains drawn on the inside of the lantern room. And so I had to go back early on. There's a page where we see the lighthouse on the windy page, and I had to quickly draw in the lighthouse keeper pulling the curtains across inside. So it was very much an ongoing thing until the very last minute, this research and uncovering new information about how the whole lighthouse worked. But kids love that part of it. They love hearing about winding the clockwork and how often that had to be done, and the thought of never having an uninterrupted night's sleep. They love the bell and the stories of the bell and the foghorns in different kinds of lighthouses, and the tenders, how long you would have to wait between their visits, but also how keepers would get from the ship to the lighthouse shore in these treacherous waters with, you know, craggy rocks when the boat couldn't come close enough, and they'd have to use a bosun chair or the pulleys and things that would, you know, that's just made for children in a way. It's all so exciting and intriguing and fantastic.
I'm curious, could you say a little bit about the media you use to illustrate Hello Lighthouse? The illustrations I find very precise and delicate, and I read somewhere you used Chinese ink and watercolors. Is the Chinese ink thing, is that something that's unusual at all?
I think it is a little bit unusual. It's the way I've been working for about 15 years, and I discovered it by accident, but I'm sure I'm in no way the only person to use it in this way. I don't use it in the traditional sense that Chinese calligraphers use it, which is to grind the ink on a stone and then to use a sumi brush or a Chinese calligraphy brush to paint the ink in a deep, rich black line. Instead, I grind the ink on the stone in the same way, but then I use it in more sort of transparent layers to build up the dark tone. And then I use washes of watercolor over the top. So it has the effect a little bit of like tinting an old black and white photograph. This is just the way I've developed my own technique, and it feels like a little bit of magic when the color goes on. It's always the fun part to watch these black and white pictures sort of come alive, as it were.
Well, it is magic. They're very beautiful. Would you say that has the process of researching and writing and illustrating Hello Lighthouse, has it made you into more of a lighthouse buff than you were before?
Oh, it's completely seductive. I realized you actually asked me before if there was a particular lighthouse that it was that the book was based on, and it wasn't one particular one. I did cheat a little bit, and certainly the interior has echoes of Eddystone or those stone rock lighthouses built on a rock or a ledge. But the exterior is closer to a few that I visited in Canada, in Newfoundland. It's a little bit like Peggy's Cove Lighthouse, which is a fairly famous one, I think, in Nova Scotia, yes, which I did not visit. But it also is similar to one I did stay in on Quirpon Island, on the northernmost tip of Newfoundland. So that had a wooden exterior. The island it was on was much bigger than the imaginary rock where I placed it. And also, I think these solitary, remote rock lighthouses would more likely have had two or three keepers rather than a married couple living there. But for the purposes of my story, I wanted to make that the inhabitants. So
no, I didn't mind that at all. I realized that you sort of cheated a little bit in that way, but I didn't mind that at all. And you know, in American lighthouses early on in the 19th century, they did populate some of those lighthouses with families before they decided it would be a better idea to make them so-called stag stations with males only. You probably did read that historically there were families in some of those very remote lighthouses. And I think that was true in Europe as well. So,
yes, yeah. I mean, some you read about had 11 children born in a lighthouse.
Right.
And the one, in fact, on Quirpon Island had had 9 children. Mm-hmm. And at its base, there's a tiny white picket fence surrounded grave. I mean, it's as big as a shoebox, and that's where 2 of the infants who perished in childbirth were buried at the base of this lighthouse. And that struck a chord immediately and just reminded me, as I began to read about so many different lighthouses, that all of them were filled with stories and stories of life and stories of loss and of death. And that these stories were all recorded in the logbook. Not as stories as such, but as just, you know, succinct, brief notations alongside reports of weather or passing ships or oil usage. And you would stumble across a, you know, something sort of profoundly human and heartbreaking in its kind of brevity.
Well, Sophie Blackhall, thanks so much for spending time with us today, and congratulations again on the success of Hello Lighthouse.
Thank you so much. It's always a joy to talk lighthouses with anybody. Thanks so much for your time. May you have fair winds and
keep a good light. So there you have the first edition of Lighthearted Light. I hope you enjoyed it. We'll be presenting more of these shorter episodes periodically. For now, to all our listeners, keep a good light.